شو هذا الصوت؟
Hello, good afternoon. Can anyone who's joining confirm if you can hear me and see my slides? It would be also good if someone can confirm if they can see it in both streaming and collaborate. Good. We will give it a couple of... Okay, thank you so much for confirming. We will wait a couple of minutes for more people to join, and then we can start. I think we can start, and who joins later can go back to the video, to the streaming, and check the content. So welcome to today's tutorial, the second session of selected aspects of maritime infrastructure security and resilience. Yesterday, my colleague George presented to you mostly theoretical foundation for the maritime infrastructure and some of the new technologies, such as the autonomous vessels. Sorry, give me a couple of give me one moment. Okay. Yes, so today I'm mostly trying to present to you content that will help you your analytical thinking so that you try to apply what theoretical foundation was laid out yesterday to you by George, and try to think of certain attack scenarios, threat modeling, and how you actually do security pen testing, for instance. So today we will start we will start a little bit about talking some maritime cyber incidents. I will give you some technical details of how they actually unfolded, and then we can discuss some of the risk management practices. Yesterday, George presented to you in detail some of them. I will show you one main instrument that is used in almost all risk management approaches, which is pen testing. I'll describe to you a pen testing standard. And then I will describe an autonomous ferry use case that is part of my project that I work in as a PhD here in, at INTINU, so that you you can have a more clear idea, not just abstract concepts. You can actually see it working, and we can start discussing a certain scenario that this vessel can be attacked, for instance, and other relevant vessels. So mostly presentation today is going to be mostly technical and realistic scenarios, so that, and it help you visualize certain threats and attacks. Okay, we can just start. One of the things to mainly discuss when you talk about cybersecurity is threats. And one of the most important elements when discussing threat is threat modeling. How do you discuss a certain threat? How do you describe it? How you evaluate certain threat considering to other? There are more than one threat modeling techniques. The first one is used for cyber physical systems, discussing source, motive, target, attack vector, and consequence. The other one is STRIDE. It's very known in the software development domain. It's originated from Microsoft, and it's still used to this day. A very recent threat modeling framework, it's not originally a threat model, but it's been used as a threat model, which is the ATT&CK framework, which I used a lot in my PhD. So you see that there are many other options for threat modeling. I'm not saying who's the best, because it's totally different and based on the use case you want to do threat modeling for it. It's a good question. The coloring usually doesn't mean specific thing. Here, it's just to show that there are different elements, and because they're usually very difficult to map the different elements in different threat models together. Here's just to show that there are different elements, and they mean actually nothing. why I bought this this slide, basically, to show you that you might be asked sometime to describe a certain threat in an exam, in a job interview, in a paper you work with. In any way, you have to describe a threat. It's very important to define what's your threat model, which elements of the threat you need to present. If you choose to use attack framework, then you need to describe these specific elements of a threat. Who's doing the attack, what asset they're targeting, what objectives or tactics they want to achieve, techniques they use, mitigations they avoid, etc. So it's usually up to you to decide what threat model to use. And you can define the threat model and describe it and use it to describe a threat. Let's have an example, for instance. For this one, it's one of the most the high-level threat models, which is used in the literature, which is defined the source. Is it adversarial or accidental or environment? The target, which is a certain system. It's self-explanatory. Attack vector, what they're trying to do. Are they intercepting, interpreting, modifying, or fabricating? The motive, why are they doing that? For either criminal, spying, terroristic, political, or cyber war. And what is the potential consequence? What will actually happen if this unfolded from the aspect of confidentiality, integrity, privacy, etc.? Now, let's have an example. And I'm giving you this example so that you can see how a certain threat described in a certain paragraph should have these elements. For instance, an attacker, which is a source, as part of a spying activities, which is motive, aims to track a ship that is part of a company, which is the target, fleeting through a fleet through abusing online tracking system, which is also a target, to intercept navigational information, which is the attack vector, to reveal confidential information and cause harm to the target company. The consequence. This paragraph describes a certain threat with all these threat elements. So when you ask to describe a threat, remember to define the threat model and describe the paragraph and make sure that that paragraph has all these elements of the threat mentioned. The next thing usually is to, when you describe a threat, you should describe whether it's the risk of that threat. Is it high risk, low, medium, or whatever? And for that, usually the most common approach is for risk is to be an element of a function of likelihood and impact. What's the likelihood of this threat actually occurring? And if it occurs, what's the impact of that? Now you have this threat. Let's build the rest of the next couple of slides trying to analyze if this risk that's written, the threat written above, is high or low or medium. So what's the likelihood of this attack happening? And if it happened, what would be the impact? So basically, it comes to this question. How difficult is it to locate and hack ships? Can we do it, actually? For locating ships, there are different frameworks. One of that is the OSINT framework, which has, it's not only for maritime or for ships per se, it has many domains. One of them is to provide you with certain tools that you can use to find ships online. One of them is marine traffic. You can go there and find ships all over the world. This doesn't give you, of course, cyber information like IP, address, port number, services, etc. It gives you the physical information of these ships that they are actually broadcasting. It's not a secret. It's not a threat that they are broadcasting this information. You can access it to use it for later stages if you're planning on doing an attack. For example, this is from Jovik. You can see that you can target track Shebladner and see where it is and all the information about it, the best routes, everything. How about hacking ships? Can we actually hack ships? It has been demonstrated before that it does not require a high level of skills to hack ships. Of course, this was 4 or 5 years ago. I've witnessed that the cybersecurity has been improved in maritime domain, not excellent degree, but at least there has been some improvements. Also, Shodan. Can we use Shodan to find ships or any maritime component that we can use to get access to these ships? For example, ships are known to use VSAT routers, and there are, if you use Shodan to look for VSAT routers, this, by the way, this is a screenshot from one of my results. You can find some VSAT routers. I have, this is a screenshot of the VSAT router webpage, and you can have, you can see there's a Telnet session, so it's accessible through Telnet, and Telnet is not secure. So yeah, I stopped there, but imagine a very motivated attacker what they can do. The other thing is an ECDIS, Electronic Charge Display and Information System. It's a device that is most critical and a lot required in vessels to find charts, and they find the maps and route, define the routes. I found one long time ago on ECDIS, and it has a lot of vulnerabilities, and they can be invoked. Some of them can be invoked remotely. Another case, which is cyber physical tracking, some components can be found in Shodan that they provide not only the IP address and port number of that device, it also gives you physical information, like where the chip actually is. So from one source, you get all this information. And I use that for cyber physical tracking of ships, and I can share with you the results later. But you can see, locating and hacking ships, the likelihood of it is not low, I would say it's medium. The impact of it, if that happens, let's have a group of cyber attacks to see what would be the impact if we were able to locate and hack ships. There are, I know that George discussed some of the, some with you yesterday. I'll just go quickly on some of them. Costco attack, they targeted the internet connection, and they lost their operation. So the impact here is very high. The shipping process merely stopped. And you can imagine with companies such as Costco, if there's a delay in shipping, the repercussion of that can be very huge. A lot of deals will be broken. A lot of fines needs to be paid. So the amount and the impact is very high. Coastal attack, they were able to access detailed information of certain systems, and they get that information and sell it in the black market. So you can imagine this is for sensitive companies that like related to some naval companies, or they have some high confidential information. The impact of such attacks can be very high. You can see these are schematics of very detailed schematics of maritime systems. In the wrong hands, this can do a lot of harm. Now, I'm sure some of you heard about the Marsh attack, and I think George referred to it yesterday. I will give you in detail how did it happen, so you can imagine how certain small mistakes can lead to catastrophic failures. It started with someone just seeing that screens turn off black, everything goes black. So there's a visual element of that. You can see that things, systems are shutting down. And it cost Marsh around more than $300 million. It was the most costing cyber attack ever. The ship, the container trucks were arriving to the port, and they were denied access, because they were told that ships are on board, still, they are unable to unload their cargo. Basically, we have no idea what these ships has, who will take the cargo that comes out of them. So they were really paralyzed. But what happened technically, on the technical level? So you know now the impact on real world, the shipping was paralyzed. But what made that happen? There was a worm inside this network of Marsk. It was told to be one of the most fast-propagating piece of malware ever witnessed. It went very super quickly between different computers. It consists of two main elements, which is a vulnerability by Eternal Blue. It was found by an American agency in NSI, I can't remember the name exactly. It's written here, but the quality is very low at my laptop, so I cannot read. But you can see Eternal Blue. I know the vulnerability, it's called Eternal Blue. And you have Memcats. Memcats is a very known tool that can extract credentials from memory. It's used by pen testers as well, extensively. Eternal Blue has been patched at that time of the attack. There were patched for it. So Memcats could not been dropped after that malware, and cannot access the credentials or the RAM of these devices to extract the credentials. However, there were some unpatched devices, and if you were able to find one unbatched device, and you get into that and unload memcats, memcats would go into the RAM and find credentials in the RAM, and use these credentials to access other devices. Imagine if these among these credentials is a network administrator. Or one unified credential that used in multiple devices. Even if that device is batched, now you have the credentials, you can use it to access it. So it was used to propagate through the network. It only needed one unbatched device in the whole entire global network of Marsh. So the point of entry, how did they actually get that unbatched device? There was a very messy data center in Ukraine that is operating a software for financing, for accounting. And it was used by almost all companies in Ukraine, and one of them is the Marsk Ukraine office. That was the entry point, and since that office is connected to the Marsk network, it propagated through the entire network, and it led to a very devastating cyber attack. It was a reference to be similar to a nuclear bomb in the world. Imagine a cyber attack being called as a nuclear bomb, because attack against Ukraine caused an attack against the entire nation, because the repercussion of Marsk network dropping is catastrophic, because Marsk has offices all over the world. And it was really a big deal. But the question was, weren't they able to recover? Couldn't they recover the system, the network quickly? Unfortunately, with ransomware, everything was dropped. Like, everything was burned. They couldn't recover anything because all the devices, all the network was affected. Lucky for them, there was just one domain controller in Ghana, there was one domain controller that wasn't affected, basically because they had electricity, a power outage. So because that power outage at the time of the attack was occurred, that domain controller was kept safe. Then they wanted that domain controller to recover the entire network. This was the story that happened with Marsk. The question was, another question would be, couldn't have been stopped. Like, it's an attack. Marsk is a really big company. They should have anticipated it, more or less. And they actually did. They discovered a lot of vulnerabilities in their network. One of them is insufficient network segmentation, because the network apparently is open to each other. One attack in Ukraine covered the entire world. But if they had really good segmentation of the network, the damage could have been contained in certain areas. They have discovered that vulnerability, but they didn't fix it. They had the funding to fix it, but they didn't do it. The reason why they didn't do it is basically it couldn't have been contributed to their bonus. So the reason why all of this happened, the security guys asked for additional money to do this additional improvement, and they weren't granted that, and it happened. So did they have a very low, let's say, low-risk assessment? They didn't actually do it quickly, even with the money, without the money, because they thought that the risk is low. Maybe they thought that, no, we are good enough. We don't really need it to do it now. So this is why you need to always think about the risk. This is my introduction to tell you about the risk. Risk is one of the biggest aspects in cybersecurity, not the only one, of course, but one of the biggest aspects. And always you need to consider likelihood, how things can happen, and if they happen, what would be the repercussion. So even if the impact is high, such as the case of the Marsk attack, but the likelihood is low, I think sometimes if you have the resources, and they did have the resources, it must be a done deal. It should be done. So it's a lesson to be learned. What are additional threats in maritime? And some of them are open and still hasn't been fixed, and I don't think they will be fixed anytime soon because the technology exists and it is vulnerable. One of them is GNSS and GPS spoofing and jamming, of course. When you say GPS spoofing and jamming, they go hand to hand. And you have adversarial machine learning. Now with the new autonomous vessels coming, they are built mostly on machine learning and artificial intelligence, and there are core vulnerabilities in these algorithms that make them susceptible to adversarial machine learning. This is happening. I think spoofing and jamming is clear. It has been demonstrated that it's possible. Researchers were actually able to diverge a vessel from its track using spoofing of GPS signal. Russia is using it extensively. This was, by the way, 4 years ago, but now there are a huge rise of that attack, and Russia is using, and they're one of the leading countries with this technology, GPS jamming and spoofing, and they're using it in wide scope. In this direction, one of we investigated me and a group of my colleagues about the navigation data anomaly analysis and detection as a countermeasure to that. We have set up a testing environment that we have a ship simulator that has sent the navigation data to a chart plotter, which is an ECDIS, and we have a tool that we can invoke certain attacks. So if you are interested in this domain, we can show you certain attacks, how they actually happen, and what will be the impact of that, so that this is hopefully will be at some time used to develop domain-specific intrusion detection and anomaly detection software. So if you like these things, get in touch. We can generate, you can see that our testbed can generate very known and clear vulnerabilities. You can see the impact of them in this figure. Regarding adversarial machine learning, imagine like this is an autonomous vessel that uses sensor to navigate through. If attackers somehow manipulate the environment around them to make the vessel be fooled, to misclassify certain objects like a buoys, like you can see ships use these flags and buoys to find its location and know where to go. If attackers somehow make the ship misclassify those as a mountain, for instance, it can diverge its location and they might be tracked and taken to a hostile area. It's a new area. It hasn't yet been studied very well. If you like machine learning and adversarial machine learning, get in touch. We are developing some research in this direction. This is an example of how adversarial machine learning would happen. If you have a picture and add some noise to it, it can make the classifier misclassify it as, like this in this example, a car can be thought as a toaster, basically. You would not know why, because this is machine learning algorithm and it's just misclassifies. There's an existing work also from MITRE ATT&CK in this direction to classify all the attacks that can be considered adversarial machine learning. It's a new area. If you're interested, I highly suggest to get in touch with me or feel free to go in it yourself. Okay, maritime risk management. As described by George yesterday, I think he mentioned the IMO resolution, this one, and what does it say, the objectives of it. I'm not going to go through it again. I think it has been covered by George. It's not really as important to know the details of that IMO resolution. It's just that it suggests risk management practice in the maritime domain. And there are different applications for risk management and different approaches. Like DNV suggested the plan do check adjust. And I think also George mentioned that yesterday. And the U.S. Coast Guard implements the NIST framework, which is identify, protect, detect, respond, and recover. Here, I'm not going to discuss them in detail because it's not the point of my argument. My argument is that any risk management process usually has one common process, which is evaluation through pen testing. Pen testing is an important instrument to be implemented in systems, not only maritime, all cyber components, to get not the risk assessment, the initial risk assessment, to validate that. We get the risk assessment from experts. They analyze the system. They find risk. They estimate the likelihood, the impact. But pen test gets definitive results. You can actually know you have that risk or not. It is usually costly. It costs a lot. It requires a lot of human resources, a lot of experts. It takes a lot of time. It needs a lot of laws and regulations to be followed. So it is a very costly process. But let's talk about this process and how it is carried usually. There is a standard. This is not the only one. There is one common standard. It is followed by DNV. There are other ways, and I'm not going to say standards, ways or practices, like a certified ethical hacker approach. You have Pentest Plus. You have many others. However, they almost all have some of these elements altogether, which is first, you start with pre-engagement. That will go, which is defining the scope of the process, how it does, what components are within the scope, what do you want to test, what you don't want to test, at what time, who can be involved, who cannot, what should I do, should I approach employees, can I approach this system, can I implement a new zero-day attack, can I turn off a firewall, things like that. It's like discussing what to happen, what not to happen. And then intelligence gathering. We have defined the scope, now we will start. What information can be collected about the target system? Can we use open source tools such as OSINT, Shodan, Nessus? Can we use vulnerability tool, customized vulnerability tools, whatever, to get information? Sometimes, for instance, who's the CEO? Can we get his email? Is there a certain company that all employees use? Can we use a website that looks like that company to fool them into logging and putting their accounts? This amount of information, this high-level information. Now we do threat modeling. We have gathered enough information for developing a certain approach, a certain attack to attack the system. And here threat modeling comes. We have known the information. Now we define what we want to actually do. This is, for this example, we want to see, can an adversary conduct a phishing emails to collect information about the company, collect their credentials, collect certain confidential information. Usually you define not only one, you define a group of threats, you define them and take an action plan to take them through. And attack frameworks comes perfect in that direction. I will not take you in deep details into that because that's not the point. The point is to know that this is one process of the pen testing, is define the threat that you wanted, model it, describe it, and now start executing it. This is an example of an attack modeled, a threat modeled in attack framework. I actually did that attack when I did a pen test on the autonomous ferry, but you will hear about it later. And you can see it's very important to describe the elements of the threat and define a sequence of attacks to be conducted so that you test your system against this specific attack. Okay, after we define the threat that we want to take it, we can start with vulnerability scanning. Can we find certain vulnerabilities in the system that can help us make this happen, this attack, realize this attack? And usually there are different active and passive tools, like you can use scanners, you can use network traffic analysis. That's Wireshark is one of the most common components. You scan the network, you look for traces, find, let's say, certain protocol that's vulnerable. For instance, a vulnerability scan would be if you were able to find telnet passwords, for instance. You can use that to access certain devices. If you find an encrypted HTTP traffic with some credentials, that's a vulnerability. Sometimes you can use industrial scanners like Nessus to find certain vulnerabilities. So you can use this vulnerability, but you need to validate, are they actually vulnerability or not? Because some devices usually give you that, okay, this device has this vulnerability, but usually it is protected. But you don't know that. You are just detected that vulnerability. To actually validate it, you need to go and try it. And for that, you need to do exploitation. You define the vulnerability, you found it, you want to exploit it. Let's take advantage of that. We found a telnet session with passwords. Let's see if we can use this password to actually gain access to that telnet computer. So this is one very naive example. Sometimes exploitation is very much more complicated. Like imagine exploiting a buffer overflow vulnerability. But you can see the process. Now let's assume that we are in. We exploited the vulnerability. We have gained a foothold in the system. Now we are there. The post exploitation, usually you need to infrastructure analysis. We are there. Let's see what else there. What are the components connected to this device? What are the files there? What can we get? Is there a VPN service we can take advantage of it to move to a different device? Is there a remote desktop function so we can have a different access channel? So you can see there are different ways. Can we exfiltrate from this environment? Many things to do. All go within the post-exploitation phase. Now, since we have done all that, we need to report. One of the most important aspects of pen testing is reporting, because it defines the difference between a real attacker and an ethical hacker. Because an ethical hacker who's done usually the pen test needs to describe what they have found so that it can be used to resolve the issues identified by this hacker. So the reporting usually needs to describe what has been found, what's the impact of that, what's the suggested modifications to that. And usually it comes with different levels of information. Are you describing your findings to a technical person? They will know you have a buffer overflow vulnerability, you need to do this and that. That's good. If you're describing to high management, let's say, people who are paying you, what have you found? You cannot go with them in details, so the report needs to have this certain language. And that by itself is a new research. It's one of the research domains, like how you communicate threat to different audience. Like you can usually have executive summary, high-level description with what's risk high, low, medium risk. And you can have technical details with the specific exploits that you have used, the the report message from the system, very technical information, so technical people can remediate these issues. If you want to learn more about pen test standard, here's the link. It might be useful for you when you're asked to develop, a pen test campaign. Maybe you, at some point in life, exam or in work, you will be given a certain system, and they will give you tell you, okay, plan a pen test campaign. What will you do? What will you do? It's a good thing to know. There are other security evaluation other than pen testing, of course. There are security exercises. Sometimes you bring people in, show them an attack, tell them what will you do. What will be your initial reaction? Bring someone, show them that their device, their computer has a ransomware message. What they will do. So you can see what they will do. And then this is usually you're evaluating their training. Have they been trained enough or not? There are breach and attack simulation, which is a group of, this is a very recent research domain. That you can investigate if there's a certain attack that is in your system or not, and can it be detected or not. These are simulated attacks. It's a group of scripts that simulate infection, not actual infection, but simulate an infection. Gamification, sometimes you can play and model winning and losing conditions and see what are the scenarios that would lead to you losing your system attacked or winning your system maintained. And there are audits. You can usually have like a checklist. Do you have this? Do you have that? You don't? Things like that. These are high level. I'm not saying one is better than the other. It's totally different and based on the use case. Okay. Now we're done with part one. You can take 10 minutes break. And we resume at 3 in part two, in which I will discuss a scenario against an autonomous ferry, a real scenario. See you in 10 minutes. Hello again. Just to confirm, make sure. Can someone confirm that you can hear me and see my slides? Perfect. Thank you. Okay, we will continue with today's tutorial. And in this tutorial, I'm going to describe with you a full realistic attack scenario on a new autonomous auto-remote, let's say, passenger ferry, so that you can conceptualize the concepts that you have heard about in the last 2 days with George and in the first part, and see it in a real setting. So when you're asked at some point in life if you can describe a certain scenario, how would you go through a certain attack, you have an example within your hands. So first, let's describe this new operational mode that has been introduced to maritime. It's called auto-remote, which means autonomous when possible, remote when needed. So vessels are expected, not only vessels, almost a lot of maritime components like offshore units, a lot of things, should be autonomous, or not should be, if they are auto-remote, they are autonomous all the time. And if there is a need for intervention, they are remotely controlled. And it has been said to be used for improving the security, the safety and efficiency of these components. Let's have an example about an auto-remote vessel. We have this project that my PhD is part of called the Auto Ferry. Maybe you've heard it in the news. I think it's been all over. In Trondheim, they opened the world's first autonomous passenger ferry. They opened it for trial. And the last, I think it was in the past month, it was opened for 3 weeks that you can hop into that ferry and test it to cross Trondheim City Canal. Now, let's see it in this context as an auto-remote vessel. This is the ferry. Just let's have a, if you are curious to see how it works. The video doesn't work. Yeah, as usual, the video is disappointing. Anyway, it's made as an elevator. You just press a button, and if there are a lot of everybody is on board, by the vessel by itself will know. It will find a safe path and cross you to the other side and open the doors for you. You get out and the others go back. Its capacity now is around 12 people. It's all electric. It's all battery based. And it has a lot of sensors so that it will be used to find its way. And the sensors, AIS, Automatic Identification System, GPS, LIDARs, video, many others. Okay. Sorry. The auto ferry as a control system can be conceptualized as follows. You have the remote control sensor at some center at some point. It's in the area, it's called Nyhavna in Trondheim. And you have the autonomous ferry. I forget the name of the place, but it's in a different side of town. And the ferry is loaded with a group of sensors, such as radar, GNSS, LIDAR, and other components. Sorry, I'm skipping. There are something with this. Let's go back. Sorry. Yeah. The ferry is connected. It's in a different side of town. And the ferry has a group of sensors that are receiving information about the surrounding. It makes certain decisions on the ferry and send the sensor data to the remote control center, where it creates situational awareness, where it is, what's surrounding, is it safe or not. And if something is needed, there's a remote control for it. It can be diverged. So let's think about what can happen if this sensor data gets manipulated. Let's talk about an attack scenario. You have a passenger ship, you have a remote control center, sensor data is sent, there's monitoring of this sensor data, there's a control loop that goes back to steer the vessel. What will happen if these attackers were able to hear? So try to think threat modeling here. How will you describe this attack scenario using the different threat modeling techniques we discussed? This is a very important thing, a skill to learn when you want to describe this in a right way. I will give you an example. We can start with high-level objectives. What do you want to do as stages? Let's say first part, we want to target the ship. After we find it, we want to gain access to it and install attack capabilities. If we are there inside the vessel, now let's try to cause it to hit other ships. This is the scenario we want to do. How can we take it further? Regarding finding the vessel, it's really usually related to reconnaissance. You want to find the system, find information about it. There are different attacks techniques like for that, like search web and open website domains. And you can, from this, you want to see, collect information about the target system. And just one thing before we go further, if anyone of you doesn't know the attack framework, I highly suggest you look it up. It's very important to just to understand the remaining of this session. I will just post a link to it. It's one of the, it's one of the best resources for understanding adversarial tactics and techniques in the cybersecurity domain. So this posted a link for that MITRE ATT&CK framework. It has, when I describe a method here, and you don't know what is that method, you can go to that MITRE ATT&CK, use that code, and you would know what I'm talking about. Okay, we will resume. After conducting reconnaissance, we want to learn about the system. What can we do actually for this scenario? One example I gave you is to look for Shodan. For AIS messages. AIS messages AIS is an automatic identification system used on vessel to advertise their location and many other information. But also the hypothesis is that it can be used to fingerprint these systems. If it's transmitting and you find it online, you know that at least it might be a ship that's sending this information. So if you look for Shodan or for AIS messages, you can find it and you can copy that AIS message in a different tool, decode it, get all the information about the vessel, its location, speed, heading, everything. And using this MMSI, each ship has its MMSI, you can use this MMSI and go to marine technology traffic and find detailed information about the vessel itself. So now you have the IP address found in Shodan of that vessel, the port, and you have physical information about the ship on marine technology. And this is an example of a passenger ship that we were able to find on Shodan. If you're interested in this, I conducted a paper, I did a paper about this, finding maritime components on the wild, and I was able to find 331 maritime components that are transmitting their location using not AIS, a different protocol called NMEA, which is like AIS is a variation of that protocol. Not important. The case is that these are protocols that are used on vessels. If you look for them on Shodan and you find them, there is a big chance that these are maritime components. And if you find it on Shodan, you get the IP address, the port that's sending this information, and you can use marine technology to find the physical information about this vessel. Okay, let's say we located a vessel. We find its location, we find its IP address, its information. We have gathered the enough information we want to go to the next stage. Now let's try to gain access to the vessel. Now let's take the simplest approach in this is physical access. Let's see, because they are in this, in our scenario, vessel is autonomous. So we can actually go and there. It's in Trondheim. Everyone knows where it is. So we can go over or cover it, not track it. In other scenarios, you might need to track it, and when you know where it is, you go there. Anyway, let's assume what's next step. Let's say hardware additions. We want to add hardware to the vessel, and that hardware, we use it for further steps. You can either, if it's autonomous and unmanned, you can go there. No one will see you. You will get access. If it has some sort of physical security, you may disguise as maintenance. So it is possible. That's all I'm saying. When you're describing a scenario, you should discuss what are the possibilities. If something is not likely to happen, what are the other scenario possibilities? So we can have either plug hardware there, such as like a Raspberry Pi with a with Kali Linux. We plug it into the network. We are there. And another way, you can maybe send a USB stick with a malware, and if they plug it in, you're in. In any way, we need to gain initial access. After being reconnaissance, we gathered enough information. We want to gain initial access. After getting initial access, and there are many ways for getting initial access, I just described hardware additions. There are many others. We are there. What do we want to do? Let's cause the ship to collide. But before we cause the ship to collide, we need to learn the system. We are there. We need to learn. We have. We might not know where what is sending to what exactly we need to do to cause the ship to sink. So we start, one of the common tools is network sniffing or service scanning. Sniffing, you can use Wireshark. You can use T-Shark, many tools for sniffing traffic. You can use network service scanning like Nmap, one of the most common tools. You can use Nmap. And I will give you, this is visualization of the test environment that we have. Imagine we have a ship, we have a remote center, and we have the attacker. Now the attacker only sees its device. It doesn't see the ship or doesn't see other components. They are in the network, but they have no idea what's going on. They want to scan the network and learn what's going on. One example, you can use EtherCAP, for instance, to scan devices in the network. You might find several devices. You can use Nmap to gain more information about these devices. You know what operating system they're running, what services they're running. And with experience, you tend to know. Like, for example, this is a file server. If there's a certain software that file servers use, it's a GPS device. If it's sending NMEA protocol, you Nmap does find that. So you can see, you can define and learn more about the information. Now we have learned and discovered target information, target device. We need to collect data. It's not just knowing. We need to collect data. We need to intercept certain like credentials of navigation or navigational data or something. For that, you can use ARP spoofing. ARP spoofing is one of the techniques that you can use to tell the other devices in the network, I am everyone. So everyone will send to you, and you will send to everyone. They will think that they are talking to each other. So you are actually in the middle, and you are intercepting everything. And one tool for doing that is EtherCAP. When you launch man in the middle, you start seeing the network. So you go again to discovery. We are receiving everything. With doing collection, we are in the middle. Now we do discover again because we have more information. More devices are sending their traffic over our way so we can learn more. So if you do now network sniffing and network scanning, you will learn more information. And one of the information now we learned is that some devices are using NMEA. So after ARP spoofing, we were able to see NMEA messages. We can see that these are NMEA messages and who is sending to whom. This is the information we can know from Wireshark. We know the devices that are sending to which devices, so now we know more. So now what can we do now? We know this information. We are in the middle of this traffic. Legitimate devices are communicating with one another, and they are sending us a copy of that communication, so we know. What can we do? There are two general ways that we can go in this scenario. We can either denial the remote, the sensing or the monitoring device from the view, drop sensor data. There's no knowledge of what's going on. There's no knowledge of the location, the speed, anything. I will give you an example of that. Heading information. This device protocol NMEA does send heading information, which means which degree does the ship is the ship right now to the true north or to the true north or magnetic north. If you drop that information, you don't know where the vessel is heading. That can be a cause for collision. It's one of the investigated scenarios. If sensor data and heading specifically is lost, you would know where the vessel is going. You know where it is, you know its speed, but you don't know in which direction it's heading. In certain situations, that can cause a collision. In another way, let's assume we don't want to do drop, because drop can be detected. You will feel something is going on. You're not receiving sensor data. Let's see if we want to manipulate the view. We want to change how things appear. Receive the original one, drop the original stream so that the original the target device doesn't receive it, and manipulate a copy of that data. And for that, you can do many things. Let's see, for example, modify location, which is like similar to GPS spoofing. You tell the vessel it's in a different location than it actually is. And in a human, you can see. A human can know, okay, we're not in the middle of the land, let's say. But an autonomous vessel might not be able to figure out what went on. We are suddenly not where we should be. What should happen? Another thing can be is speed, modify speed and heading. We can modify it to appear as if it's different speed. So let's say if there's a procedure to keep what 10 knots speed, and you manipulate the sensor data so it shows that you are at 5. So you decide, okay, what something happened, maybe the tides are strong, we are where speed is reduced, let's increase the speed to match the desired speed. So actually now you increase the speed 5 knots, so now you are at 15 and thinking you are at 10. This can cause collision as well. Heading, we described how it can happen. Okay, what can go else? Radar target. Radar targets are also communicated over an MEA. So we know what are the targets in our environment. We have a ship there, we have a vessel there, we have a buoyage there, we have a port there, everything. What if we lose that? There's an attack scenario that we can drop that information. You think there are no surrounding vessels, but there are. So you can see many things can happen. And this how we reach to this level. So now we have achieved all our objectives following this threat model from reconnaissance, initial access, discovery, collection. Now the question usually is, what do we need to do? What attacks in what development, what mitigation measures we need to do? An attack framework tells you about that. What you need to do for reconnaissance, what you need to do for initial access, discovery, blah, blah, blah. You go and check. So now when you conduct this process in your environment, you test it. If something doesn't work, good, your security controls work. If it did work, something is failing. Either your security control is not sufficient or it doesn't exist. So this is a process that you do to evaluate the security of your system. So in conclusion, what can we learn from this lecture, all of it, that maritime security, maritime is an ongoing digital transformation, and it requires cybersecurity to be considered at different scales and different threats. Threat modeling is one of the most integral instrument in analyzing the and managing the threat, the risks. When you define a threat, it's good to communicate what level of risk does it have, how it can actually unfold, and if it has high risk, what should we do to evaluate it and to mitigate it. And there's a new attack. There are disruptive attacks in maritime, so the impact of an attack is huge, and Marsh attack is a big example of that. So this suggests that things need to be done quickly. We need to fix and improve the maritime sector and cybersecurity there. There are different security evaluation methods that can be used to evaluate and measure the actual risk, not only the estimated risk. We can see that you have that risk. It is there. By proof of evidence, it is there. And one of them is penetration testing, or the more research-oriented term is adversary emulation. And adversary emulation is utilized also to play out how an attacker would happen. Like when we describe this attack scenario, it did not actually happen in the autonomous ferry. No attacker attacked that ferry. But you can describe how it can unfold so that you can see, is your system ready or not to that? You just don't do a checklist, do we have this or not? No, you actually go in your system, see, okay, if we did that to that component, will it work or not? If it did work, what mitigation measures to do? So adversary emulation is a really strong instrument that we can use to evaluate the security of a certain system. And certain operation modes, such as the one, the auto remote, which is a ferry sending its information to a remote location and receiving control commands, it is a new thing in maritime. There's usually no remote control of systems. So if you manipulate the sensor data, you may generate false control commands, which leads to catastrophic impacts. Now I will end my tutorial today with a group of future projects. I know you have to do a term paper, and at some point you need to do a master thesis. So if you are interested in this field and you want some support, I'm here, and we have a group of people working on maritime cybersecurity. We are interested in the following topics. That's at behavior and data generation in maritime. You can like develop some tools that would generate certain data to like used for simulating certain things. Modeling safety and hazards for cybersecurity analysis. When we show like a certain security attack, how it's linked to safety. There are limited work in that direction. Application software of software-defined networks. If you have some sort of knowledge in software-defined networks, software-defined radio, there are plenty of applications for it, and we are very much interested in this domain. And we have software-defined radio kits in our lab. They're just ready to be used. If you are interested, get in touch. Application of artificial intelligence in cybersecurity in critical infrastructure. There is a huge rise of interest in artificial intelligence and machine learning, but there are limited discussion of the security of these devices, of these solutions. Themselves sometimes are proposed for security, but some of them themselves are prone to cybersecurity threats. The financial and operational cost of cybersecurity. Like, we can always say, okay, let's put firewalls, intrusion detection, segmentation, vulnerability scanning. Okay, let's give everything. Let's put everything. But what's the cost of that? These things cost money. They cost human resources. As you mentioned, and you remember the Marsh incident, they knew what's the problem, but they really couldn't implement it because they needed a raise for doing that, because it's a lot of work. So investigating the financial cost of cybersecurity and how we can reduce the cost of cybersecurity and make it more sustainable, that's an interesting domain. Utility of explainable AI. If you like AI, it's the same thing. There's a concept called explainable AI, of that you force the AI systems to describe themselves, how they reach the conclusion or the result they have reached. A good question is, how is it suitable for security? Because there are talks about that explainable AI might impair the AI solution. You need to make it think about an additional step, so you make it less strong. But is it suitable for security or not? Is it good? The interrelation is new. So it's a good research topic. Security of VDS. It's a new trying to replace autonomous identification system, AIS, and it's not thoroughly researched. A research article about this is very much appreciated. And if you want to consider it for master thesis, get in touch. Threat to adversarial machine learning, same thing. You can see that the theme here is AI, adversarial machine learning. Thinking of adversarial machine learning in critical infrastructure, surveying what are the existing coverage of this topic in different critical infra, either in energy, maritime, oil and gas, transportation, whatever. That's also an interesting one. And more. You gathered enough information about our area of work. We are developing some maritime competence, maritime cybersecurity competence here in Njøvik. We have some partners in Ålesund and in Trondheim, so we're trying to work with. If you want to work in such environment, either in your master thesis or in your term paper, you're more than welcome to reach out. Thank you. I hope that the tutorial went well. You've learned something new, and it didn't bother you much. If you have any question, any comment, don't hesitate to reach out. The tutorial is done now. Have a good day. Have a good weekend.